Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It. I'm Allison Stewart. We just heard about all the material that's entered the public domain this year, including hundreds of thousands of sound recordings from before 1923. Those include some very early audio experiments, plus comedy sketches, and a whole lot of music from opera to blues to ragtime. Recordings from Fanny Brice, Al Jolson, Rachmaninoff, and a young Ethel Waters are all freely available to share and adapt for the first time. So here to highlight a few of his favorites is WNYC's John Schaefer, host of New Sounds and Soundcheck. Hi, John.
Hi, Allison.
So we've been joking around here. You're the host of New Sounds, not Old Sounds. But you actually do pay attention to the public domain. Why is it important to you?
Piggybacking on what you were talking about with Jennifer Jenkins, in addition to doing New Sounds as a radio show, I've also been doing it as a series of live music performances to old silent films. So knowing which silent films are coming out of copyright has been something I've been very interested in for many years. And it's a short walk from silent films to the movie of the music of the 1920s and even earlier. There's some fascinating stuff with fascinating stories behind it.
Let's dive right in. You have your first pick is, we know the song, Alexander's Ragtime Band by Arthur Collins and Byron Harlan. Tell us about who they are.
Well, Arthur Collins and Byron Harlan did the first recording of Alexander's Ragtime Band, but of course the song was written by a young Irving Berlin, and it caused his meteoric rise to the top level of American songwriters. Irving Berlin lived to be 101. He actually outlived the copyright to the song. So the song was, in the 1980s, became public domain, but these recordings, the first early recordings of the song, were copywritten until January 1st. And this was the first of them. This is the 1911 recording of Alexander's Ragtime Band.
Come on here, Alexander's Ragtime Band. Come on here,
oh yes, it is.
Come on here,
oh yes, it is.
It's the best band in the land.
Can they play the bugle call like I never heard before?
Why, it's so natural that you want to go to war. That's just the best of San Juan. Honey lamb, come on along,
come on along,
come on along. Let me take you by the hand. Up to the mill,
up to the land,
up to the mill,
up to our band.
Who's the leader of the band? And I would like to hear the Swanee River playing right time. Come on and hear.
Alexander's Ragtime Band. My guest is John Schaefer. He's not my guest. He's my colleague. He's the host of New Sounds and Soundcheck. So we talked about the difference between copyrights and recording copyrights with Jennifer. Jennifer Jenkins, Center for the Study of the Public Domain. Are there any compositions entering the public domain this year that seem especially exciting to you?
There are always, you know, new compositions coming in. I suppose if we're talking about 1926 now, the standout for me would be the Gershwin song, Somebody to Watch Over Me. That is now in the public domain. So in terms of compositions, you know, every year you get thousands of them entering the public domain. You don't always get one that is as iconic an American song as the Gershwin tune.
Well, let's move on to actually our next recording, Castle House Rag by James Reese Europe and his Society Orchestra. I want to know everything about them right now.
Well, James Reese Europe was the first black band leader to record commercially, and he did not lead like a small Dixieland-style jazz band. He led a big John Philip Sousa-style band, playing music that in those days was spelled J-A-S-S. It was before jazz had changed to the two Z's. This is a 1914 recording made especially for dancing. I don't know how anybody danced to the end of this when it gets really, really frantic. But here's James Reese Europe with the Castle House Rag.
¶¶
That is Castle House Rag. What kind of instrumentation am I listening to?
Well, like I say, it's a Sousa-style band, so you've got lots of horns. There is a pretty big rhythm section. There's piano. There's xylophone, which people in those days liked because it would cut through. You know, these are obviously old acoustic recordings, and that would cut through the mess. Europe was also, James Reese Europe was also not just a big deal here in the States. He is credited with having introduced jazz to Europe after the First World War, when he served in the army and then took his army band to France and was a huge hit there.
The next recording you've chosen is a performance of Ave Maria. Tell us about it.
Yeah, this is from 1904. The singer is Alessandro Moreschi, the last of the castrati singers. This is, you know, somewhat unusual part of the classical music tradition in Western Europe in the 17th and 18th centuries, especially, where some of the most famous singers were castrated men. They would be castrated as they were boys so that their voices wouldn't change. And the practice was outlawed in Italy, finally, in 1870. But Moreschi, in 1904, towards the end of his career, made the only known recordings of a castrato singer. And he had a very high voice, as you might expect, but not a particularly feminine one. There's an eerie, ambiguous sound. As I say, it's towards the end of his career. He was not in great voice at the time, but this is what we have to kind of demonstrate the sound of the castrato singer.
Unusual. I will say that. Yeah. Alessandro Moreschi, Ave Maria. I'm speaking with John Schaefer, WNYC's John Schaefer, host of New Sounds and Soundcheck. We are talking about some of the music that has come into the public domain this year. The next choice you have is Mamie Smith, Crazy Blues. She was a Black vaudeville performer, and I love that the New York Times wrote a piece about her last year with the headline, 100 years ago, Crazy Blues sparked a revolution for Black women fans. Why was this song such a big deal?
You know, it sold 100,000 copies almost as soon as it came out. By the end, it had sold more than 1 million copies, many of them to African-American listeners. And this was a sea change in the young recording industry, because suddenly there was interest in expanding the sale of records and record players to a whole other audience. And this led to the development of what came to be known as race records, so which was not just African-American music, but it included Cajun music and Appalachian fiddle tunes, anything that wasn't quote-unquote popular music. It also led to the striking tradition of great Black women blues singers, like, you wouldn't have Alberta Hunter or Bessie Smith having the success that they had without Mamie Smith first. And it all starts with this 1920 hit called Crazy Blues.
Cause the man I love, he don't treat me right. He makes me feel so blue, I don't know what to do. Sometimes I sit inside and then
why do you think Mamie Smith isn't a household name the way those other artists you mentioned are.
I think simply because she was the first and, you know, kind of paved the way. And then, you know, Bessie Smith, certainly much better known. And, you know, there was, as I said, a whole century of opportunities for Black women to sing the blues and later to sing jazz. You know, it had to begin with someone. And she was so successful at it that, you know, she really provided a platform for people to come and kind of obscure her with their own fame.
Let's hear a recording of another great singer from a very different genre, maybe the greatest opera singer of the earliest 20th century, Enrico Caruso. What are we going to hear?
Yeah, we're going to hear the Agnus Dei by Georges Bizet, who's best known for his opera Carmen, but wrote some other things too. It's funny that you make the distinction that he was, you know, a great opera or classical singer of the day, because in the early 20th century, tenors like Enrico Caruso or the Irish tenor John McCormack, these were pop stars. Everybody who had a record player had records by John McCormack and or Enrico Caruso. They were as popular as anybody else. This is a 1918 recording, so it's perhaps not Caruso at his very best. I chose this one simply because for a 1918 disc, it sounds really good, so you can get a chance to hear more of Caruso's voice than you might under other circumstances.
Jonathan, we're going to go out on Ed Gallagher and Al Sheehan, Mr. Gallagher and Mr. Sheehan. Okay, so there's a poster from the Ziegfeld Follies. Is this song actually from Ziegfeld Follies?
Yeah, I mean, both Gallagher and Sheehan were, you know, veteran vaudevillians. And in 1922, they recorded this song, which is kind of a look at a rapidly changing society. So especially, you know, there's a verse about what do these women think they're doing? They have the right to vote. And, you know, now they're wearing shirts and pants. But it's all done as a kind of series of questions and answers between the two of them with a punchline, an unexpected punchline at the end of each verse. Some of the verses, Allison, I have to say, are a little problematic these days. There's one about, a Negro baby is born. How can something so dark be so light that, you know, just clangs on the ear in these days? But what I've done is I've edited together two of the verses from this 1922 song. Super catchy, super memorable. And it's simply called Mr. Gallagher and Mr. Sheehan.
John Schaefer is the host of New Sounds and Soundcheck. Thank you so much for walking us through all of these tunes, and we will go out on Mr. Gallagher and Mr. Sheehan. Thank you, Mr. Schaefer.
Thank you, Allison.
Oh, Mr. Gallagher.
Yes, hello.
Mr. Gallagher.
Well, well, well.
Do you think it's wrong for a man to strike his wife?
Strike his wife?
Suppose she goes out every night, then comes home and starts a fight. Is a man supposed to stand the treatment all his life?
Well, no, but Mr. Sheehan, a man who raised his hand to his wife is low and mean. If it's more than you can stand, remember, never use your hand.
Use diplomacy, Mr. Gallagher.
Use a sandbag, Mr. Sheehan.
Oh, Mr. Gallagher.